Good morning, wonderful listeners. You've tuned into Post Session Podcast, a podcast filled with the stoke of a surf session and the wise guidance of an ocean voyager. Your water-loving hosts are ready to share this infectious state of mind while encouraging and inspiring you
for your next adventure.
I want to say to everybody, welcome.
Okay, this is recording. The shit show. This is Ashley recording.
And Laurel. That's the new name of our podcast.
It should be, because we fought with the SD card for like 20 minutes this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and, eye contact with the recorder. God, technical difficulties are not my forte. You know what? I can figure it out, but it's so much easier when I can just be like, Ran, help.
Well, and also like technical difficulties that happen under a time crunch.
Well, they like all happen under a time crunch.
That's why they're difficulties, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So, Laurel, are you curious about adoption?
Not really.
But some people out there might be, and that's why we're going to talk about it today. We're going to talk about adoption.
Okay.
We want to discuss this, and lucky for us, you were actually bona fide adopted. Legally adopted.
Don't tell anybody.
And you can talk to no end about this thing, right?
I'm sure I could talk quite a bit.
This is pretty personal, though. Are you sure you want to go here?
Absolutely. But I also want to say, hey, guys, y'all are listening to Post Session Podcast.
Yeah. Okay. So, since we're already off to a rocky start, how about we ease up a little bit and just go with some post session notes? This is what everybody wants to hear anyhow.
Yeah, I'm sure they're waiting with bated breath to hear about our latest ocean escapades.
Yeah, which are none. Anyway, what do you got?
Well, I've got a couple. Last Friday, I got to go out and catch some really fun waves. Like the kind that don't often happen here, which I think happen a lot on the West Coast, which is paddle out and catch like a dozen waves, like one after another, and have time on the face to turn and cut back.
Are you wearing a wetsuit yet?
Okay. You had to bring up a sore subject.
Yeah, I did, because I'm thinking I'm not going out there without a wetsuit right now.
Well, the water temp, we don't know what it'll be by the time this releases, but currently it is 64 degrees. And I wore a spring suit on Friday.
Oh, no. 64 for me, that's straight up full on wetsuit.
I have a thing. I don't like to wear the full wetsuit till after Thanksgiving.
Well,
it's a push myself, be uncomfortable until after Thanksgiving.
And then just let it all hang out. Well, put on your sweatpants and rock and roll.
My holy wetsuit. That's the problem. The wetsuit's thick. It's low tech. You know, it's 10 years old. Yeah, it's time for a new
Get a new one, because they're really nice these days.
Ashley, I don't have a job right now, by the way.
But you are going to Puerto Rico, so there's money somewhere.
Well,
Christmas is coming up too.
It'll be Don's bonus from work that will be.
I sure hope that comes through.
I do too. I hope nobody's or somebody's listening that can make that happen.
All right. So you caught some fun waves. What else?
We caught some fun waves. And obviously this past weekend, we got a mention. Ashley, if y'all don't know, Ashley and Laurel, me, wrote a screenplay, our first ever, with the help of Peyton. What's Peyton's last name? Oh, my gosh.
It's a great question.
Anyway, he is a student at UNCW in the writing course, and helped us take our Google Slide document and turn it into a full-fledged screenplay. And then we've taken that, written a teaser from it, and shot said teaser over the course of a couple of weekends. And this weekend, we shot the last bit. We were out on the south end of Wrightsville Beach, shooting some paddling shots and a near miss with a boat.
How did it go?
It went awesome. Nicest guy, Joe Oates, let us borrow his boat. I tried to give him gas money, and he refused.
Wow.
Yeah, super kind. He's like, oh, he enjoyed it. And he And he let Grom just, I was like, well, I know Grom's got like a captain's license or something, and maybe we can duck you down in the back with a tarp over, because we were going to do a drone shot and I didn't want him to be seen. And he's like, oh, well, I'll just get out. If she's got a captain's license, she's probably got more experience than
me. Does she have a captain's license?
We got to check on that, but she said something like that.
I would think no, she doesn't. That doesn't, but
maybe.
Maybe.
I'll double check on those details. But yeah. Anyway, she is very cautious driver and boat driver. So she did a great job, and Joe was nice enough to stand on the beach while Grom took over his boat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. All right, cool. Well, let's see. Mm-hmm. What did I do? I didn't help film. I wasn't there. What did I do this weekend? What did I do?
You went to the mountains.
Oh, yeah. I did the opposite of a water adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we did have a little trickling brook, you know, a babbling brook next to the place that we were staying. And Cape did manage to fall in.
Ooh, I bet that was chilly.
It's like the only water within a 100-mile radius. And he definitely fell straight in with his clothes on. So that was something. The mountains were great, though. They're beautiful. I like making a trek there.
Yeah, were the leaves still changing?
Leaves are still changing. I mean, obviously, we missed the peak because there were definitely some...
brown.
naked trees in the higher altitudes, but it was still... The leaves were still pumping at the lower altitudes. And Ani got the cutest little hairpin thingy with feathers and I don't know.
Indian. She,
yeah, exactly. Some kind of native inspired thing. And it was super cute.
Did y'all VRBO?
We VRBO'd, yeah. My sister-in-law took care of all that. The house was banging. There was a pool table in there.
What?
Yeah, that was cool.
Nice.
Anyway, just good old-fashioned family trip with everybody. 9 people.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
9 people.
How many bedrooms?
4.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, everybody had a room. Yeah, pretty much.
No, they didn't.
Pretty much. We had to double up a little bit.
Triple up for one, at least. All right. Well, let's dive in to the injustice of the week.
Yeah.
Week. All right. Well, you may be looking at the script, Ashley, and see that I put in some statistics. And then the injustice of the week, this episode, is the... amount of children per amount of actual foster parents. So when we talk about children in need of foster care, we're talking about children that have been abused, neglected, and or without appropriate care from an adult to care for them. So nationwide, there are 400,000 children in foster care.
In foster care. That's a lot of kids.
400,000. That's almost a 500,000 children without parents or that are in the foster care system.
Mm-hmm.
So nationwide, over half the children are over the age of 10 years old. So, you know, that is the greatest need is...
The older kids.
Absolutely.
That nobody wants to foster because they're afraid of behavioral issues. Yeah, that's hard.
So in New Hanover County alone, our neck of the woods, there's 351 children and only 108 licensed foster parents or foster homes. So many kids that come in, obviously, if there's 351 kids and only 108 homes, they have to be farmed out to outlying counties, which is... you know, problematic because these children are, you know, to get visits, to be in their school districts, to all those things have to change for those kids. And talk about being in already an unfamiliar place and then top that off with a longer trek to see any family that may or may not be close.
Well, you have experience fostering also.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say to encourage people to foster, because that doesn't sound like an easy road. I can see, even though these numbers, you know, evoke compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Like I want to be compassionate, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, they could all live with me. But really, what about my 2 kids? Mm-hmm. And what about any kind of negative influences? Because I'm assuming not all foster children have emotional issues, but a lot of them probably do. I mean, if their home life is such that they have to be taken away from their parents, mm-hmm. thinking it comes with a little bit of baggage. So what would you say about that? Can you speak on that?
Well, yes. So obviously the longer that they have been in situations that would give them emotional scars, trauma, that's going to make it harder. Mm. I would encourage any family, like I would look at the age of your children. Mm-hmm. Like if you're talking about having kids come in with your children, I would be looking at children the same or similar ages as your kids. Mm-hmm. Because number one, it is nice for children to come into a set momentum, mm-hmm. you know, so you've got, oh, we're getting ready for school. Well, these kids kind of will look to your kids as, oh, let me, I'm doing this. And so even people who have multiple foster kids, maybe they've taken on one mm-hmm. or a sibling group of two or three, and their home is licensed for five. Like they, you know, so then they're bringing two more in and you've already got these three kids moving in mm-hmm. a routine. And so it's easier to bring them in. I will say for myself, for Dawn and I, we don't have our own children. So we've had one and then we ended up taking some twins, sibling group. And man, that was easier. And maybe all the other parents yeah. already know that. Like, yeah. it's easier when there's more than one.
You don't have to be the prime source of entertainment all the time. Mm-hmm. They have their own pack already. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. especially if they come from a situation, mm-hmm. they already are leaning on each other and, yeah. and things like that. They probably support each other emotionally.
So my number one advice would be look at the situation, the need. But then you don't have to say yes to every call. Mm-hmm. So you need to kind of look at yourself and what your family has to offer, the strengths of your family. And then when you go through the fostering education program, which is like a 6-week, one night a week, maybe 8-week program where you learn about all the different things that those kids may come with or what their needs are going to be, be able to, when that call comes, to be able to say no. It's okay to say, no, that's not going to be a good fit for our family.
That's going to be hard, though, because you feel like you're saying no to a child that needs you.
Yeah, but you're already saying no.
By
not doing yeah. it, you're already saying no. And the second thing that I would say, the number two, is you also could say, we just want to be respite foster parents. You know, mm-hmm. so here are these parents who are providing foster care for kids. There is a place where that family may need a break, or that those people may need to, they already have this planned, you know, like for us, it was nice. We had a couple who, you know, we had the twins. This couple lived not that far from us. They had grandkids the same age as the girls. They wanted to have them. Like, they were mm-hmm. so excited to have the twins come stay the weekend. And that gave Dawn and I just a little date time.
Because you can't just hire any babysitter.
You can't just we did. We still uh-huh. cheated and had like somebody from the church come by and mm-hmm. baby one of the younger people. But for a weekend, you can't let them stay anywhere for the weekend or just have somebody here overnight stay. They have to be foster approved.
Yeah, they have to be vetted.
Yes. Yeah. Background checks, mm-hmm. all that.
Yeah.
So that would be just a small way to support the foster care system mm-hmm. and support a foster family. And build relationships and see, is this something that we could do full time? Maybe it's not. Maybe you go out of town a lot. So maybe you could do
respite
care. And even if it was once a quarter, you could pick how much time it is. And so that's one thing I would always say to everyone in ministry mm-hmm. is just because you say yes, it's not a 100% all the time yes. It's not a 24/7 yes.
It's not like having another kid. Like you just birthed another kid that you have to raise to adulthood.
Till 18.
Yeah.
Because this is a service, you know, yes. So we fostered for 6 years.
And then, straight? Consecutive? 6 consecutive years?
6 consecutive years, but we took break. We might like say we had the twins, it was a little over a year. Then we took like a few months off before we would say yes again.
To
like,
another?
To another child.
Okay, so you fostered for 6 years, but it wasn't like you had the twins for 6 years.
No. Right. And so it's okay to go, this is a season in our life that we can say yes. And then it's okay to say this is a season in our life that we're not doing it.
Right.
Like and it's important to want to do it.
Yeah. And not feel like it's something you have to do, because right. raising your own kids is important also if you have them. What about, I guess you would say you had an overall positive experience fostering.
Yes. So we did have an overall positive experience fostering. I will say one of the major stressors of fostering was the Department of Social Services. Mm-hmm. And so maybe something that I would recommend, and if we were to do it again, this is what we would do, is go through an agency that is a good map, that you feel good about. Like we went through the Department of Social Services, and so there was no buffer mediator advocate with them. I mean, they give you, you know, you have your fostering a social service person who mm-hmm. is a really nice person. And then, of course, the kid, who whatever children that you have, they have a foster person. But, I mean, a Department of Social Service person. I feel like having an agency separate from them be your in-between takes care of some of the issues that I would say we had.
Okay, so you had some bureaucratic issues or whatever, and an agency could help.
An agency can help with that.
Well, those are small issues. I mean, maybe they weren't small issues, but that's kind of nice that that's resolvable.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, take home message. Think about fostering. Maybe not now, maybe later. Whenever. we'll put some resources, too, in the page that you suggest about that kind of stuff. I think it's time to dive deeper, though. And what I'm thinking, Laurel, is why don't we just start by you telling us your version of your adoption story, and then I'll ask some questions to fill in the blank, because this is the kind of thing I was telling you when we were writing about this, that you might think, why would anyone want to talk about adoption? But I think it's fascinating in the same way that when you see a set of twins, you mm-hmm. just want to stare at them a little bit and then ask them lots of questions like, do you like the same candy or what, you know, all these things. Because it's an anomaly, even though adoption isn't, it's not every day that we have the opportunity to just ask about your life as an adopted child. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So tell me your story.
Okay. Well, my parents had my older brother. They had tried to get pregnant. Couldn't. He was 4 by the time I came along. But during that time, they did offer my parents, they wanted a girl.
Your parents wanted a girl. Okay.
To go with their boy, I guess. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But while they were looking, they were offered twin boys. So thank God my parents could say no. Mm-hmm. You know, they prayed about it. It was hard. It is hard to
say no to a I feel like you're saying no directly to the child's face.
We'll have to ask Mom how that went.
Yeah.
But I did call Mom for this episode. So, but it took about 9 months for the Department of Social Services in Wilmington to find me, basically. So they, Department of Social Services in Wilmington, my parents were in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, and we're looking. And so they put out a notice to other departments of social services.
Right.
So they got the call for me. So the story that I've always been told is that, you know, she didn't carry me in her belly, but she carried me in her heart. Mm-hmm. And so it took about 9 months to get me. And
just like a maternal birth. Or that's just right. like a natural biological birth.
And so they came to Wilmington and they met me. and they weren't able to take me.
Well, how old were you?
I was 3 months. So I was born May 31st, and then September 3rd, I think they met me.
But were you already separated from your birth mother?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mm-hmm. So at 3 months, you were already in some kind of foster care.
Yeah, so I would have been in a foster parent's place for those first few months.
What a crazy age to be fostered.
Yeah,
because it's all about the connection with the mother, mm-hmm. and you need so much care.
Yeah, so that's a big undertaking, people that take newborns.
Yes, you should send them flowers, whoever did that.
Whoever it was.
I don't know.
No. And so my parents came up to meet me with my brother, and actually we'll post a picture of, I've got the day that they got
me. Yeah, awesome.
Yeah,
so yeah, that'll be great.
When they met me, the social services were like, well, you can't take her today. You have to sleep on it. And they're like, what? You know,
right.
We want her
We've
now.
Been sleeping on it.
And they said that I had like red fuzz on my head, and I was rolls on top of rolls.
So they were like, sleep on it. Make sure you want to sign up for that.
Yeah.
She's chubby.
and then, of course, the next day they could take me home. So, and there is, I mean, so the story, I don't remember not knowing. I asked mom about that because I know you were going to ask about when to tell. Should we go into that?
Well, sure. Yeah. Because you told us about how you came to be with your parents, but you know, on my birthday every year, my mom tells me my birth story, mm-hmm. except this year.
Hello?
She's slacked.
Mom,
you didn't tell me the story. I thought you were going to tell me when you were leaving the other day out of your car window, but you still didn't. But anyway, so did you grow up hearing about your adoption on your birthday, or what happened?
Yeah, so I was always told that I was special, that they wanted a little girl, and they had to search long and hard to find me, and that I was desperately wanted, and that even though I wasn't carried in mom's belly, I was mm-hmm. carried in her heart. And then the day that they got me was, you know, the most wonderful day in the world. And I'm sure my older brother was just a bit jealous.
Well, I mean, he had his own story, though.
Yeah. So, like I said, I don't remember a time not knowing that I was adopted. So they always told me, like, from the youngest of ages, I just remember saying or being told that I was special.
Mm-hmm.
I was chosen. I mm-hmm. was looked for. I was desperately wanted and desired. And I took that to heart. Like, I never had any, there was no disconnect. You know, I just knew I was extra special.
Well, it sounds like they just told you your version of your birth story the same way that a biological child grows up hearing the same thing.
Yeah.
You were their first child. It was so exciting. Let me tell you, you know, let me go through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so you grew up kind of not oblivious to the fact that you're adopted, because I think some parents don't tell their kids, and that could probably be pretty devastating, I would think, to hear that midstream.
Yeah. So I think mom said, when I called her, I said, well, how did you know to tell me early? You know, she said she had read something. And mm-hmm. so I think that was good advice, because I can't imagine believing something that you were, you know, oh, these are my biological parents, and then finding out that they're not, then it would make it feel like there was something wrong with me.
Exactly.
Or something bad happened. You know, mm-hmm. that they couldn't tell me, because then you realize it's been a lie or it's not true.
And it makes you question that intimate relationship you have with your parents, which shouldn't
you
be.
No,
because if they adopted you, they wanted you. So they should just say that. So before adoption, you were in Wilmington.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know your foster parent. Do you know your birth parents?
Mm-mm.
You have no clue, anything? You never were curious?
Well, of course I was curious. So on my birth certificate, which I think is kind of interesting, it says Elizabeth City.
Even though that's not true.
Even though it's not true.
What's up with that?
I guess, I don't know. Well, so North Carolina has some of the most strict regulations about adoption. So the cases are permanently closed forever. You know, so it's no, it was, which I believe is a really good thing. You know, like this, all these shared stories and stuff. I just, there's a, that could be a whole nother episode probably. Just from working with children for the past 11 years, I saw so many parents that come in at a later date or come in and out, and those children are left so broken from the disappointments.
North Carolina makes it so that your parents made the decision, close it off. Now it's their choice how to handle it the whole rest of the way, which sounds fair. It sounds like,
because you're raising this child as your own, and then this parent could come back in.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
We've raised these children. I mean, like there was no doubt who my parents were.
Mm-hmm.
This was Mom and Dad,
mm-hmm.
Ann and Lenny. And I wouldn't have wanted somebody coming in and shaking everything up. But so, whereas I guess like say the state of New York, at 18, all documents are released, like they're open. Now you can go pursue or whatever. And I don't have a problem with anybody who would want to go pursue their biological parents. And maybe that is something that you need to do. I was curious.
How could you not be?
Right. And I probably wasn't that curious, but I had a friend, an only child that lived a block up. And she was always like, oh, you know, well, are you curious? What do you think they're like? You know, so there was some seeds planted that,
yeah,
I'm a 7, Enneagram 7. I just like to have fun. And, you know, I didn't question a lot of stuff deeply, you know, but then when she said that, I was like, oh, well. And then when I was a teenager, my questions were more on the lines of, did she have big boobs?
Is there somebody out there that looks like me?
Is there something coming?
Yeah.
Ever? So, boobs. And, you know, like, did she, I don't know. So I guess there were some things about looks that I was interested in as a teenager.
Well, did you ever feel like you looked way different than your family? Did they have a familial look and you were kind of like, you know, a thumb sticking out on the side?
You know, what's funny is that people would say I look like my dad. But
oh, that's funny.
Bald and I don't know how that
people want to see. They want to see resemblance.
Yeah.
You know?
So I guess I heard things like that, but I don't look anything like my parents.
Probably Benjamin being different, special in his own way, and having a look that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, might not resemble your family.
Well, he does.
He does.
Yeah, he looks just like my dad.
So I was about to say, that'll soften. That could soften the differences.
Plus, I was 9 when he was born.
Yeah. Wow.
But so, you know what? I got a lot of comments on how cute I was. I got a lot of comments on how, you know, I don't know. I think maybe people knew, especially the people that we're in a small town.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people made a big to-do about me.
Oh, like there's that adopted cynic baby. Oh, you were in a cynic.
I was Hughes.
Yeah,
but
there's that adopted.
It was more, she's beautiful.
Oh, you didn't get an ugly one. You got a cute one. You got your money's worth. I get it. Everything, you kind of grew up fairly normally, it sounds like, you know, part of the integrated family. Your parents did a good job with all those things. Did you ever...
Fairly normally.
Well, there's some obvious issues. Did you, as a teenager or as a young adult, where we question everything anyway and we have this internal tension going on, did you ever experience rejection issues then? Because that can break people. I mean, you had a mother, so you may not have, but
I think everybody has some rejection issues.
Right.
And so I don't know that I had any outline rejection issues or like even questioned my worth per se.
Mm-hmm. You knew it was all about her.
Yeah.
What she was going through or whatever.
Well, I didn't even think about it that much. To be honest, so maybe this is a less interesting podcast than you were hoping.
I know, you didn't internalize any of this.
I maybe somebody would say that I did from the outside, but I really didn't ever feel like I...
Right.
I never felt rejection. Like, that was not something in my sphere of thought.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got older, by the time I came to Wilmington after college, at some point, I guess when I was questioning about the boobs and the color, you know, the hair color or different things like that, you know, was she whatever, my parents allowed me, you know, there was some information that these parents gave about me or about them to social services.
Oh, like biological.
Mm-hmm. So I knew that
diseases.
They were.
Genetic stuff.
More like interests. Like,
okay.
She sewed, I think, you know, or they were from some state, not our state or any state bordering our state.
Were they young?
They were young. She was Catholic and he was Protestant, which evidently was something back
wait,
then.
Wait, did they cross state lines to...
I think so. Yeah.
Have you
yeah.
give you up for adoption yeah. so that their name wasn't soiled wherever they
sullied.
Came from?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know what? That's actually really heartening because it means that they did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they
mm-hmm.
decided to have you because mm-hmm. they could have just not. But maybe that wasn't an option then. I don't know.
So, no, it wasn't. That's right. Abortion was illegal then. Well, 69 was when, you know.
Imagine how hard that must have been for them.
It was hard. And then I think there was also some Vietnam War, like, because that was going on, he was either going off or coming back or there was a lot. There was a lot going on at that time.
So there was a father in the picture, though. I mean, they were a couple.
Boyfriend. Yeah.
Boyfriend. Yeah, obviously. That's interesting because I just assumed, right, wrong, or indifferent, that she was
alone.
Troubled.
Uh-huh.
You know, on drugs or whatever it is that maybe she chose to have you and give mm-hmm. you up. So, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, you have two biological siblings.
Mm hmm.
And you're How sandwiched in the middle. That's kind of weird. Yeah, that's crazy. But did you feel tension? Like, did your, you know, especially when your brother was 12 or 13 in a total terror, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, kids are at that age.
Mm-hmm.
Did he use that against you, your adoption?
Benjamin?
And no, I'm thinking of your older brother, because Benjamin was so much younger.
Yeah. So Lenny, no, I mean, he...
You mean he was never just like, so what, you were adopted or...
I don't remember him ever doing that.
He never thought of it.
I'm not saying that he didn't, but I never... Yeah, no, I don't remember him ever throwing that in my face.
No
Which
sibling tension.
Which is actually a good thing because, oh, no, we had plenty of tension and plenty of fights and arguments. He was sweet to me as when I was little, but as I got, by the time he was probably 12 and I was 8, there was, regular,
normal.
Yeah, normal sibling
yeah.
arguments and fights and whatever. But, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because... Surely that crossed his mind to say.
Well, you try to hurt.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah. I said mean things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course he'd call me fat later. But
yeah, I did that too. I remember doing that to my brother.
Yeah.
That was the only thing I could think of when
yeah.
he was about 12. He chunked out, you know, before he just became this huge, yeah. towering dude. And that was my weapon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, so I had, you know, his hair was thinning in high school. So
oh,
when I was younger. Yeah. So we
yeah.
had our things, you know, but to his credit, and I'll have to thank him for this at some point, but I don't remember him ever saying that ever. And
mm-hmm.
if he had said that a lot, I'm sure it would have been planted.
You know, it sounds like maybe your family just didn't ignore the fact that
no.
you were adopted, but because it was such an integrated
story into our...
that it may not have ever been,
mm-hmm.
it may not have ever crossed his mind. Yeah, maybe once or twice.
Sure. And maybe my parents squelched it. Maybe they, I don't know. I'm sure they would have
been.
Put the fear of God in.
Yeah, that could have been one of those things that he knew, oh, I should just never go there.
Yeah, I'm going to get a spanking.
But what about grandparents and things? Because especially old school people... Sometimes I've noticed anyway in blended families and stuff that there's a big emphasis on blood.
Mm.
And I'm wondering if yours ever treated you differently. Because I remember like Ren's grandmother, who was a wonderful woman. You know, I loved her. She loved us, all that kind of stuff. But there was one cousin who was not adopted. It was a step grandchild, but he had been in the family since he was, I don't know, three or something crazy. But still, she would say, well, it was made known that he wasn't the blood and all this. Wow. And I'm wondering, did you ever have those issues, or was everybody just 100% inclusive all the time?
As far as I know, they were 100% inclusive all the time.
Well, this is an easy story.
Well, I think when you do bring the story in the beginning, there is no shush, this is this, or let's talk about this behind their back. I mean, you know, so if, but still maybe there could be that, but that was never, maybe that was be a question I'd ask mom, but I never heard anything like that. Or I never, if anything, I felt like that I was top. You know, like I had been sought out. I was special, extra special.
Right.
Extraordinary. Extraordinary. Whatever.
They went over the top.
Well, I think they were super excited, you know, and, you know, there was, I don't know. I wonder.
You would have felt it if there was a difference.
Yeah. I never felt it.
Yeah. And your mom might speak to it more because parents are very keenly aware of favoritism amongst their children. If they're parents that do not condone favoritism, they don't show it themselves, they love everybody the same, they're very keen on picking up those signals from other people.
Yeah. I remember mom, when I did talk to her before this episode, I said, well, you know, it seems like Lenny would have been really jealous because I was getting a lot of attention and I was so cute. And she said, well, you know, and when we were out and about and I had you in the stroller and him walking beside, you know, like they've made a big deal out of him too, because he was like white haired and blue eyed. And so.
Well, I think about my own children, you know.
They're both gorgeous.
They're both wow. But Ani's super special because she's the first. She's the original. We're the OG three. But then KP's the baby, so he always gets that attention. Oh, he's so cute. He's so cute. He's so cute. So they have their, they both have their thing. I'm sure it was the same dynamic in your family.
Sure.
Yeah, don't worry. They were telling Lenny he was special too. He was the first. Do you think, this is probably the last question.
Okay.
Do you think your experience as an adopted child paved your career path? Because you worked with troubled children, or you know, children in need of additional care
supports.
You think it happened because of your adoption, or is that completely coincidental?
I would say I actually got into the field that I stayed in for 11 years. My first entry into that career was working with kids with special needs. So if anyone influenced that particular path.
Benjamin.
It was Benjamin.
Oh, okay. So less about adoption, more about your experiences growing up with a special needs brother, which we probably need to talk about that in another episode.
Well, that one we'll have to have mom on.
Yeah, that will be awesome because that's an interesting story too.
Yeah,
I need to do this for your mother. Listen, go home, see your mom. It's been a while.
Going this weekend.
Go to the bench. You're going this weekend?
Yeah.
Good. You need to go home. Okay. Do you want to do the Devo now?
Well, yeah, I think so.
Tread on in?
Tread on into some God waters.
Okay. This is an easy one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all over the place, right?
It is. I picked Romans 8.
Oh, I thought you for sure you would do Ephesians.
Well, I was thinking about that too. I actually marked both.
Well, do Romans. I want to see.
Okay. So they're similar. But the bottom line is we get adopted into God's family. So, and, you know, I actually had a friend tell me that their husband, when we talked about them possibly fostering or adopting, she said, I don't think he could get over it not being the blood.
You don't know, though.
And I thought, guess what? Or no, I didn't think guess what. I thought it's a good thing God doesn't feel that way. You know, like, oh, if we had to be a certain thing, or the if we had to be Jewish, that's what the Jews thought and was the case for all the Old Testament, all the thousands of years before Jesus.
Even after Jesus.
Yeah.
You know,
aren't there different religions, whether it be Jewish or Jehovah's Witnesses or whatever, that think that someone or some people are excluded? And God desires that we all, he created every one of us with a beautiful design. He designed, like, the word for divine, like the designing us is masterpiece. It's almost like poetry or some type of creative, artistic design. So here's the scripture.
Yep.
Let's get to it. All right. So Paul is speaking to the Romans and talking about, you know, how we are new people and we're no longer bound by, you know, doing what just what we want to do when we want to do it. That oftentimes is, well, and is selfish, and we are enslaved to, like, desires that I just got to get what I want when I want it. And so, and but if Christ is in you, your body is dead because of sin, yet your spirit is alive because of righteousness. And if the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead is living in you, he who raised Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through his spirit. Let me go to the message side. So don't you see that we don't owe this old do-it-yourself life one red cent? There's nothing in it for us, nothing at all. The best thing to do is give it a decent burial and get on with your new life. God's spirit beckons. There are things to do and places to go. The resurrection life you receive from God is not a timid, grave-tending life. It's adventurously expectant, greeting God with a childlike, "What's next, Papa?" God's spirit touches our spirits and confirms who we really are. We know who he is, and we know who we are, father and children.
Well, it's interesting because in the verse, there's many verses that speak of adoption. That verse doesn't say the word adoption. Okay, it implies, yeah, that we're all God's children, but doesn't say exactly the process of how we're adopted. So why'd you choose that one?
Well, I chose this one because it talks about us accepting God's proposition of, hey, come to me and you're adopted in. All you have to do is accept Jesus. Accept Jesus as God. And then we become God's children. So it's not like there's some big entrance exam.
Or you have to be born into it.
Or you have to be born into it, have some blood of Jesus, or that you have to be a good person. You don't.
But you will be transformed.
You will be transformed, but guess what? That transformation goes on your entire life.
Yeah, it's a pain, really.
And I'm reading this book called The Cure. I highly recommend it. And it gives a little parable of, like, once you're, you know, okay, I'm one of God's kids. There's a path. And one path leads to the hall or the room of good intentions.
Oh, yeah. You were telling me about this book.
Where you try really hard to do what God wants you to do. And then the other path leads to the room of grace, where you simply depend on Jesus to do the transforming. You depend on God to move you out of things that are hard and or move you out of things that are bad for you or harmful to you, and move you into a place where he can give you more and more abundant life. So, for instance, God's word says he can give you the a desire to do his will. And so, yes, is there work to be done? Of course there is. Yeah. But when we make mistakes, which we are going to make mistakes, the remedy is not, oh, I'm going to work harder. I'm going to do better next time.
Right.
No, no, that's not it. It's, let me confess to somebody else here in this room of grace something that I'm struggling with. And let's invite God into it. Let's put some light on it and reveal it.
It's a really complicated message.
Yeah, sorry.
Because, and speaking to that book, what you're going through reading that book, or learning about, it's a complicated message because you do have to do both. You have to remember to invite God into everything. Mm-hmm. But you also can't sit on the bench, you know, with a crack pipe in your hand, mm-hmm. expecting God to slap it out. You know, it takes some decision making also.
But part of the, I think we live in a culture that is, all right, let's get motivated, let's get mm-hmm. pumped up, and I'm mm-hmm. gonna work out every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
yeah.
I'm gonna not eat.
Which
this.
We're gonna do.
Yeah. So, but in God's economy or in God's family, mm-hmm. when you think about like what your are your kids working to manage y'all's family? Mm-mm. Are your children working to earn your love? No. Are they trying to impress you? Well, maybe they are sometimes, but your love for them is unconditional. Mm-hmm. And when you see them veering off into a destructive course, maybe it's the whining course or the dangerous course or whatever it is, this is God, so he's way better at this than we are as parents. We fail all the time because of impatience or whatever, but God is forever patient. So he knows this is not going to lead to a good thing for Laurel. Let me... No, this is my stomach growling.
Good Lord, I heard that.
Let me see how, if Laurel's open to me, if she's coming before me and offering her life to me, I can direct her.
Yeah.
What Laurel's hiding her box of chocolates mm-hmm. so that she can have that in the dark. You know, she's going to sneak, whether it's smoke, you know, doing drugs or something that's destructive in your life. Maybe
or even like you said, the chocolate that you're hiding. Yeah. Or whatever. Are you hiding
or even
some?
If it's some selfishness or money that you, oh, well, I want to like make sure I have enough, mm-hmm. you know, so you're self-focused. And so when you open yourself up and say, hey, Ashley, I'm struggling with this. I'm struggling with letting go of control of mm-hmm. something. I'm mm-hmm. struggling with my anger. I'm struggling with chocolate. And I invite another family member in to like pray with me about this, or, you know, be a listener and open up and then invite God into it. Like, God says we'll be healed. Like, and he has when we surrender, it's almost like.
It does require admittance, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't just stay quiet about it.
But not admittance so that somebody can shame you. That's not it.
Well, no, because then you just won't admit anything.
But that's what we do. That was in that book, The Cure, in the room of good intentions, everybody just has this mask on. Mm-hmm. And they're very uncomfortable if you show any chink in your mask. Mm-hmm. Because, how soon can you get that fixed? Because we want that taken, you know, we need you to be smiling and with a nice mask on that looks very appropriate so that we can all feel good and look super happy and well put together. Whereas in the room of grace, we're not, it's not the law anymore. We're not bound by hiding, and we're broken, and we come before God and ask another person in. We put light on the fact of something that is hard for us or struggling, and we know God convicts our heart. When we offer our life to God and ask Him to be Lord of our life, He reveals to us things that He puts His finger on things in the most gentle, helpful. God, there is no condemnation in Christ. So there isn't a, you should be ashamed of yourself. You don't even belong here. You're not part of my family. It's none of that. It is, I love you so much as a precious child in my family. Of course I'm going to help you carry this. Of course I'm going to lead you in a path that is healthy and that is going to, you're going to be blessed. You're going to be not so heavy, light, wide open spaces. Like that's some of the verbiage that God uses to describe what it really looks like to walk in the Spirit as opposed to the flesh.
Okay, do you guys hear all that?
Ay, 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 sorry.
That was some long God waters.
Sorry.
It's all right. Everybody needed to hear it. But we are going to wrap it up now.
Yeah.
Because we're running late.
All right. Thank you so much for listening, you guys.
Thank you for listening.
Put some resources for adoption and fostering.
Yeah, we'll do all that. We will, check out our website so you can add yourself to our newsletter and find out when something fun's happening. Don't be afraid to do that. All right, thank you. We'll see you next time.
Bye.